Welcome to Smart Cherry's Thoughts. This is Sai from India.
How's everything where you're at?
It's really good, Mike. Thank you very much for accepting my invitation and accepting to be on my show.
Good, good, good. So you wanted to know a little bit about WISPA and what we do and how we help our nation and actually get the story of fixed wireless out to America and the world, right?
Yeah, exactly. Can you introduce yourself
Yeah,
before I?
so WISPA is an American association. It has about 1,000 members. About 700 of them are operators, small ISPs that operate mainly in rural, under-resourced, sort of blighted urban environments or urban environments that don't have connectivity, and then tribal nations, Native American regions of the country. We bring broadband connectivity to about 10 million Americans, primarily, though this is changing, through fixed wireless access and mostly through unlicensed fixed wireless access. So this is different than mobile. Fixed wireless access essentially is an antenna, a horn or antenna placed atop a tower, much like a monopole or a macro tower for cell phones, pointed like a flashlight to people's houses and businesses. They in turn have a piece of CPE, customer premises equipment, that allows them to receive the broadband signal and transmit back to the tower. So what you've done is effectively create a line between that tower and the house without making a line. And this is an important distinction. We are able to, this is especially popular in rural and very sparsely populated areas, because if you had to establish broadband with wires, it'd be very costly, and oftentimes you just can't do it. So when you think, just about anywhere you can breathe, provided there are not insurmountable hurdles, blockages and other things, you can get wireless broadband. And this is what our members strive to do to about 10 million Americans. They get service through this. The phenomenon of the WISP goes back over 20 years, and a lot of our members started very humbly, but with a question and trying to meet a challenge. On a farm, we have a dozen or more members who started their own WISP because they needed connectivity on their farm, and they did not have broadband connectivity, what it was known then to be. And so what they did was they took essentially, they modified Wi-Fi equipment, and they got a signal and then distributed that to themselves and to their neighbors, sort of bridging the gap. And they're the sort of the front lines in what we call bridging the digital divide. You probably know a little bit about this too. It's a common thing throughout the world, in America and in developed and developing countries. This is providing solutions where there is no connectivity. So they did it on their own, and still to this day, they provide connectivity largely on their own dime to their communities, to their neighbors, to their families, primarily through fixed wireless. Unlicensed fixed wireless is a big part of what they do. Unlicensed means here in America and throughout the world, we call it Part 15 primarily. Part 15 services are essentially Wi-Fi, but on different channels. And they have, over the past 20 years, a whole ecosystem has developed to take advantage of unlicensed, once formerly called junk spectrum, to provide their broadband signal to people that they're serving. We serve through the 900 megahertz spectrum, 2.4 gigahertz spectrum, 5 gigahertz spectrum. Soon we'll be serving through the 6 gigahertz spectrum, and then in the millimeter wave spectrum, the 60 gigahertz spectrum. Others, this is expanding. And the importance of unlicensed is it creates lower hurdles to entry, so that you don't have to be an AT&T or a T-Mobile or Deutsche Telekom to reach the masses. All you have to do is buy the appropriate equipment, which is affordable and scalable, and make sure that you can see your customers and send that signal to them accordingly. So this has become a very quick, cost-effective, robust, and evolutionary way, it's still growing, to bring broadband to where it wasn't. Right now, we see an expansion of this throughout America. This is just to give you, to lend gravitas or credence to the idea, companies like T-Mobile, Verizon, AT&T, are using these same concepts to reach through 5G people, not in a mobile setting, but with antennas and antennas sending signals through fixed wireless, through the fixed wireless model, to millions of customers. So it's a concept that works and is growing, and our members thrive in bringing this service connectivity to where it wasn't.
So what is making you possible to give 10 million people this service?
Well, that's a good question. So I come back. It started off largely as just a private need. There was a call, I said, 20 or so years ago. People saw that they needed broadband, and they recognized that then connectivity to reach the marketplace. They're in rural and geographically remote locations. There wasn't adequate facilities. And so on their own call, they said, I'm going to satisfy this need. And this sort of reflects the membership that we have here at WISPA. They're mavericks. They see a need and they fill it. So until recently, until probably the past 4 or 5 years, it's been almost exclusively privately bankrolled by the individual operator and the ecosystem that has grown up around it to provide broadband to customers. They've taken it out of their pockets. They've mortgaged their houses. They've gone to banks. They've got loans from their parents. They've done whatever it has taken to develop and deploy the services that, again, allow about 10 million Americans to get access to broadband right now. Currently, we're going through, a revolution in this model, and we're starting to see more government support. And this, in a way, runs contrary to where our members have been, who've always taken the risk on themselves. But this support is pretty extensive. One such program through the Department of Congress is going to spend $42 billion to help people in rural, under-resourced, and tribal parts of our country get broadband through the operators. And this money is then going to be implemented through government subsidy, through government grant, essentially. And members such as that populate WISPA are actively going to be seeking this money and other grants to, in fact, grow their businesses. So we're seeing a revolution there, because for the past 20 years or so, they've taken it out of their own pocket. And many now are seeing that, look, I don't really care how I grow. Yes, there are strings with the money, the government money, but this might be a way also to continue their growth path, to enhance and to further build out facilities that weren't there. So we're largely privately out of our own pockets and our own risk, but also more and more members are seeing that this is a viable way, the government support and subsidy. So that's how we go out and serve people. I think a second part to the question is, you know, what drives these companies? And there are economic calls in the marketplace. And that is, many of these areas are sparsely populated. Few people live in them. They're hard to get to. And as a result, the old telephone companies have either not gone there or have let their facilities essentially rot. They ignore them. So again, these members are mavericks. They're seeing a need. They're feeling a need. And they see their neighbors and their communities who were served by some very large, you know, multinational corporations, not getting the service they deserve. And as business people have gone out and realized that they can get to those unserved people or underserved people cost effectively, quickly, sometimes virtually overnight, and can get a return on investment within months, not years. And so those economic calls, their nature is what helps them go out, see the markets, make the markets, and then serve new customers.
So who are your users?
Okay, so the users are, they tend to be, it's about an 80-20 split in terms of 80% are primarily residential, and 20%, that's growing though, are business, enterprise and business. Those are different classes of customers, residential customers. As I mentioned at the top, mainly rural inhabitants that did not have adequate service or did not have any service. That is the backbone of what WISPs sell. And they're selling anywhere from 25 megabits down, 3 megabits up, to, depending on the technology, 500 by 500 symmetric or even higher. The technology has evolved where unlicensed fixed wireless is as competitive. It's actually more competitive than fiber in the sense that you can get it out far quicker and get a return on investment far quicker than if you were to roll out fiber to everyone's house.
And in which locations you are giving this service?
So throughout America, are you talking about?
Yeah, especially in America, in which states?
Oh, so we have members in every state but one. But we're in Alaska, which is a massively large state and has very major challenges. Because it's largely a rural state, we're especially prevalent in rural states and in states that have sparse population densities. So we're in all 50 states. I believe that WISPs are in often not, we don't have every, a member in every state, but WISPs are in all 50 states. Again, because it is a quick, cost-effective and reliable way to make a broadband connection. There are some states where we have more members than others. Part of that is because of geography. And Texas, we have a vast amount of members there. Nebraska, Wyoming, Colorado, Indiana, Ohio. But we're in all 50 states because it's a solution for bridging the digital divide, bringing service quickly, cost effectively to those who don't have it.
So in last few years, the internet users have increased. So how you are able to give service to number of people who are coming and taking new connections?
Well, yeah, so this depends a lot on marketing and the availability of the technology, but more and more our members are They're mature. I mean, they've been doing this for a generation, 20 years, many of them. So they have active, these are fully functional telephone companies for lack of a better word, with fully functional, service staffs, operational support, engineering staffs, marketing, communications. And so they go out actively with, again, on their own dime and actively market. They go and survey areas where there's need and then go about marketing that to people who do not have it. So, I mean, there's no government program there. There's no subsidy that's paying for them. These people are looking to the marketplace and they're actively telling residents and businesses in the marketplace, hey, we've got this solution. You don't have broadband, you don't have X, we can provide it. Why don't you give us a try?
So what do you say about troubleshooting if any issue arises?
Yeah, so I mean, although many of our members are small, and that means about 10 employees or less, regardless, first of all, they're all local. So we have one member who says, look, if you got a problem with my service, first of all, my office is right down from your house. And if you see me out in the street, you can wring my neck, if it's really bad. So there's that local accountability. Our members go to the same, churches, synagogues, temples, schools, shopping. They have kids in the same programs playing sports. They go to the same community events. So there's that local accountability right now. I don't, as a member, as a member of the community providing a very important service, I don't want my neighbors to be upset at me. So there's that level of accountability. But going beyond that, many, if not all, have advanced troubleshooting either through third parties, which are services that have popped up through the ecosystem, managing Wi-Fi routers and security and other services, to their own staffs that have effectively designed and then go about and a service where there are problems. If they need to, they start on the phone. Many times it's the operator error, the end user's problem. As you probably know, it's like, why can't I get this piece of, software working? Oh, I didn't read that instruction. I'm not using it properly. So that's the first line of defense. And then it moves, escalates up to the point, if need be, that a truck roll goes out. That's when they actually send crews out and make sure that the connection is clear, that the CPE, the customer premises equipment, is properly installed. There's nothing, blocking that. There's no hacks or anything like that. So, I mean, these companies have figured out a way to make sure that their customers are satisfied. They have great pride in ensuring that. And then, like any company, any mature company, go about making sure that if there is a problem, it's troubleshooted and people remain satisfied. Very low churn for our residents and for the customers of WISPs. And I think that's a testament to the fact that they're doing something right. They're able to answer the question. Not only is the broadband good, but when things go sideways, and they do, they're there to help and make sure that that service is up and running and back to normal.
So tell me about your team, how they are working in order to give this service to maximum number of people.
Yeah, so again, like with any marketplace, to go in, they figure out, what's the lay of the land. They're looking to see if there's subdivisions that aren't being covered or being poorly covered. Densities are important. Scale is important, but where the great thing about the wireless model is the fact that you have a tower, you have that antenna or horn up there, and instead of running wires to people, you're just using the air. So think like anywhere you can breathe, you can get a signal essentially, and that's how they're able to go about and create an understanding of the marketplace and develop scale off of a lot less facility than a wired facility. So again, the use of spectrum, the use of unlicensed spectrum, each one of these access points that they call, this is the antenna that sends signal to a house, can hold anywhere from 50 to 150 customers. And, you know, that's 150 customers that are connected through the air instead of having to go to hundreds of poles and running out fiber or other connectivity to the house. So that's how they're able to understand the market and create scale and then serve the customers.
How this works in different climatic conditions?
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, there are different, we have this saying, the right tool for the job. And so many of our members, probably about 30%, maybe more, are hybrid WISPs. So that means that they're using fiber, if it's the right tool. Maybe other connectivity. I've heard of a couple using old cable facilities, which has it's a massive pipe into the house. There is, you know, of course, the fixed wireless access through the air. And, you know, they go out and they figure out, you know, what is needed, what can I do? And as business people too, how can I meet their needs, which are growing, and meet with my own understanding of how I want to be profitable as a company. So every situation is different. Every geography is different. Every topography is different. And as you mentioned, climate, that's an aspect too. Some frequencies, especially in the higher frequencies, in the millimeter wave, are more susceptible to humidity and to line of sight, and also to climate or rain, that kind of thing. But every one of these operators understands, and having been local, you know, living in the area, understands what their climate is, and uses, again, works to use the right tool for the right job, depending on the frequencies, the connectivity, that kind of thing. They survey it and then go about meeting the need. They, at the end of the day, they don't want those customers to be without service. So they have a very good understanding in their localities of what's the best tool to reach that person and how that is sustainable in the long run.
So what you are, this 80% and 20% users talk about the service?
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I mentioned there's very low churn. So largely, they're satisfied with their service almost entirely. 80% of the customers likely did not have robust service in the past, so they're satisfied with what is being provided with them. And they're also pushing the provider to offer more. And so we're seeing faster and faster speeds, more capacity. That's the dynamic of the marketplace. You know, it's not a set and forget kind of situation. You know, a company comes in there, oh, this is, you know, I'm just going to put this thing up here and I don't do anything. You know, there's a conversation in the marketplace from individuals to the companies that say, you know, this is working for me. This isn't working for me. And right now we're in a conversation too. We're especially post-pandemic, where more and more people were working from home, but also more and more people understand the importance of big pipes, you know, a lot of download and upload ability. And so that conversation is going on, and our operator members are rising to the challenge, constantly evolving their service and making sure their customers are satisfied, the 80% residential and the 20% business, that they have what they need and they have the capacity to serve them through good and bad times when they need more or less, 24/7, 365 days a year.
So how much time you take to install your service, and What are the prices for different plans that you're providing?
Yeah, so the first question is, it is service can go up depending on if there's a tower there literally in a day. So I'm not, I'm not creating new poles. I'm not running a line to someone. If I'm not running fiber, I can send my signal, my fixed wireless signal, to a customer within the day, hours, and they're all set up. And it depends again on the architecture of the system, but in general, fixed wireless access is about a tenth the cost of fiber or a wired alternative. And add to this, it can be rolled out in, depending on the system, in weeks to months as opposed to years. So that's a great benefit for fixed wireless. As to prices, there aren't really, we don't control prices. Every market is different. Every market has more challenges. And so we see a great variety of prices. The last time I checked on prices, it was about $65 to $70 for 50 by 10 service. But it all goes up and up and down according to the competitiveness of the market, if there are other alternatives, and also the geography, topography, and the challenges in creating that network. So there's not really a set price, in all 50 states. I will say that again, because the churn is low with our customers, implicitly they see bargain in what their members value and what our members are providing them vis-a-vis price, service, and other options.
So you have been in the market from a long time. What lessons you have learned?
Well, so yeah, that's a good question. We're right now going through some challenges in terms of regulation and in terms of funding. I mentioned at the top the subsidies that are coming out. That is something that our members haven't really faced. One school of thought is that because regulation is low, it's a regulatory bypass. I don't have to operate like a cable provider or a satellite provider that has to send, satellites in there, and or a tariffed carrier, and ask Mother, may I, government, can I go ahead and do this? No, they see a market, they see that there's a need, their neighbors, and they go ahead and do that. That's changing right now, and so. One lesson that I think our members have learned and are learning anew is that they have this innate maverick, entrepreneurial spirit. They're agile, flexible, and pretty much can meet just about every challenge they face. And they're seeing that flexibility, that agility, the fact that they're not one trick ponies. I only offer this type of service. This is allowing them to master the challenges that we're seeing in front of us. A lot of government subsidy, which threatens to overbuild with government dollars facilities that they've already put out through their own. And also, we're seeing renewed calls for regulation that makes them actually be regulated like a old-fashioned telephone company. So, 19th century and 20th century regulation that used to drive monopoly telephone companies. There are new proposals that are coming to the fore that might bring our small members into that ambit and force them to be regulated, to ask government for permission to serve their marketplace. These are challenges that are in the forefront, but their agility, flexibility, their entrepreneurial spirit, that ethos is what helps them, has helped them in the past, and will help them move forward and to continue to grow, for years to come. So those are lessons. I think that, again, that flexibility, that agility, that entrepreneurial spirit, seeing that and understanding there, and they're feeling that again, pressed by challenges like anything in the marketplace, and they're rising to that.
And what are your future plans? You want to go globally?
WISPA itself is the American Association. There are, I believe there is a WISPA in the UK. I want to say there's a WISPA in New Zealand. They're not affiliated with us. We have no desire to go internationally, at least as far as I know right now. We want to be able to grow our members here. And we see a marketplace of about 3,000 or so small ISPs, WISP wireless, or ISPs that are doing, I guess you could say, like ex-ISP. So that means any kind of ISP that delivers connectivity. We see that as a marketplace for us to grow. And we only really have, as our membership, less than a third of that. So there's a lot of growth potential here in America on its own to get members, to have them pay dues, which is always a nice thing that helps me do what I'm doing right now, to come to our shows. We have two annual shows. We just finished one last week in Las Vegas. For a week we were there. We have one coming up in Oklahoma City, March 5th to the 7th, 2024, a smaller show, but that's 3 days. Have them come, and getting access to those operators is a growth market for us, and I think we're rising to that challenge too, bringing in more members and helping them understand the benefits that we can provide through the community, through the, you know, all of us under a single roof, ISPs of varying types under a single roof, convening, finding solutions to challenges, technical, business, regulatory, others, and learning how to thrive. So we see here in America a lot of growth, and really haven't contemplated an international scene. I mean, there's so much here that we can still access. And once, maybe someday when we've captured all the other ISPs here, maybe we'll think about seeing if we can take that model overseas. But right now we're domestically focused.
So as a technology service provider, as a person who is into networking, what is your observation about my work?
I have to say I don't quite understand. I guess you would be more an edge provider. Is that? And now I'm going to ask you questions.
Yeah, I'm a technology guy. I did masters in software engineering, also bachelor's in computer science and engineering. Right, sure. Now I'm working for a UK company as a DevOps engineer and a software developer. So okay. I'm interested in technology, and I'm into technology. I'm interviewing technology experts and technology companies.
Sure. So look, everything is connected now. Everything is connected. So it's important that we believe this, that there's universal connectivity. And universal connectivity, the network effect, means that, you know, we're greater with every new connection, and every new connection then allows people to do what you're doing. You know, usually, I don't know if you go into an office, but let's say, I don't know if you're in office right now. I guess maybe not, but you're able to conduct your work right now with fewer tools, fewer people around you, less cost, and still be able to get a paycheck. And that's by virtue of broadband connectivity. So largely, I mean, there are obviously other factors, education and, you know, other things. But, you know, the IT revolution flattened computing power so that people around the world could get access to the same tools that were in San Jose and Silicon Valley, the same computing power. We're seeing that with the cloud. People in the farthest reaches of the world are able to get access to, you know, expertise, knowledge, services like telehealth, security, other things that they never had before. And again, coming back, broadband connectivity has allowed that to occur. It allows you to thrive because You may not be in an office, but you are connected and you have access to the world. And so that's our challenge. That's what we do in America. We call that bridging the digital divide. We believe, we share this, no matter what side of the spectrum you're on. Share the idea that everyone should have a connection and everyone should be enfranchised, should be able to participate in the economy, to participate in society, and to be connected to their family, friends, to be safe, live safer, better, more prosperous lives. And broadband is a big piece of this. We saw that especially through the pandemic, and we're carrying through with this mission. This has been almost our mono mission for the past 20 years to make sure that people who don't have broadband do. And we know that when they do, they will be living better, safer, more prosperous lives. So that's what our mission is. And that's how people like you can thrive and people elsewhere in the world can thrive.
So one last observation. Like I said, I'm doing DevOps engineering projects. And apart from that, I'm interviewing experts like you who are providing different services and different working for different technology products. Me interviewing experts like you from all over the world using this internet service provider, trying to build a network and trying to create a network in which people belongs to all the countries in the world. Mm-hmm. Me trying to interview and put this kind of a work on public platform, how this is going to helpful for me and also to my career in coming days.
Well, I mean, again, I think the more that broadband becomes ubiquitous, first of all, where are you located?
South India.
South India. Okay. So now, I mean, you have, it looks like a very good connection right here. So yeah. As India becomes more wired, more people will be able to get access to the tools that, I mean, it comes down to this, the tools that make people's lives better, safer, more prosperous. And so that goes for you too. As you are able to see better connectivity, let's say you're able to develop something that's, you know, VR or, you know, something that doesn't have even a mask, maybe it's holographic, but that demands a tremendous amount of bandwidth. You can do that in India and you can serve me here in Alexandria, Virginia. Right now, it's a miracle. And I always marveled at this years ago when Skype first came on. This is in the early 2000s. I worked in an office in Washington, D.C., and we had a lobbyist, sort of an advocate in Hong Kong. We had an advocate working for us in Sao Paulo, Brazil. We had people in Seattle. We had people in Brussels. And then we were located in D.C. Through broadband, through Skype, through IT, we were able to connect them all on a screen and talk in real time. It wasn't perfect. There was jitters here and there. Now, I mean, here we are. This connection. So you could be my next door neighbor, right? So yeah. It is broken down that geography and because so much of our world is dependent on services and through IT and digital zeros and ones, you are as competitive as anyone else in the world because of broadband. And coming back to Skype, I always pinched myself. Do you understand how amazing this is to speak to people over 15 time zones at the same time? And, don't take that for granted. It's a tremendously powerful tool. And that tool is going to help us live better lives. So I think that's my advice to you is that, you know, you're going to see more and more power come to you, more and more capacity come to you. And this will open up more options for you to develop and to thrive as a software engineer and DevOps engineer.
That's a great observation. Thank you. Can I put this video on my YouTube channel with your permission?
Yes. Yes.
Also, can I put this audio and video clip on my podcast, website, internet, yes. Social media, everywhere with your permission?
Yes, that'd be fine.
Yeah. Can you share your website to my podcast listeners? Can you spell it?
Yes. Okay. So it's www.wispa.org. WISPA.org. So www.wispa.org. And that's our website. We're in the process of changing that, but the website address will be the same. And within the next couple months, you're going to see a brand new WISPA website that will be even more robust than it is now.
I'll put the link on the screen as well, and also on my website, also on YouTube. People who find our video anywhere in the internet can able to see the work that you're doing.
Good.
And can also take the service that you're providing.
Good, good. Thanks, Sai. Appreciate the time.
Thank you very much, sir. Keep going. Making more people to use your service.
You too.
Yeah.
Bye. See you. Bye.